said that whenever one has clay seudah, kalim that he uses for seudah purposes, they require tevilah before he uses them for the seudah. But if he bought them for non-seudah purposes, such as cutting paper, then he doesn't need tevilah. And even if he once in a while decides to use it to cut lettuce, so that is still a machloket. Last time we spoke about all of these different issues of what happens when you purchase a kli for one purpose and then you decide to change to another, such as well as whether or not you can do tevila in the store. And tonight we're just going to discuss an old issue, a really well hammered out issue of what's the deal with hotels, restaurants, catering halls, kiosks in the mall. You go somewhere and you see that they clearly did not do tevilat kelim. How do you know? Because you sat down in the restaurant to eat, and you look at the plate, you look at the fork, the knife, whatever, and you see at the handle of the knife is still the label that the knife came with in the department store. And you're like, hey, they clearly did not take this to the mikveh. Am I allowed to eat here? What's the halacha? Are you allowed to eat here or are you not? So if my notes would cooperate for a second, we could start. The idea is that we said that if a store purchases kalim for sales, they want to make money by selling the kli, so then that is called sechora. But here, they're not selling the kli. They're not selling anything. But at least they're selling food. But you're sitting there and eating the food on their kalim. Is that considered clay sechora? Does that count as purchasing kalim for business purposes and not for seudah purposes? Or is that considered to be a seudah, a clay seudah, and it would require tevilat kelim? This is a big machloket. It's an old machloket. It's not brand new. It's been around for a while, and it's very relevant whenever you go to a restaurant, especially if the kashrut organization is not so strong in one's neighborhood. They might have to employ certain kulot. And it's important to know, what you can rely on and what you cannot. So, the Darkei Tshuva already quotes this from Shlomo Kluger, who says, "Big chidush, believe it or not, the hotels do not have to do tevilat kelim. Any of their kelim are considered klei sechora because they didn't purchase it to eat off of. They purchased the kli to make money with it, to sell you food, and for that reason, one does not require tevilat kelim for his food." Where do, for the kelim, the idea here basically is that since he's just a socher, one would not require tevila. The socher himself, however, though, if the restaurant owner wants to use the kelim, he's sitting in the restaurant all day long, he owns the restaurant, and he wants to eat off of the kelim, he has to take it to the mikveh if he wants to eat. Rabbi Elias, your hand is raised. Do you have a shaila? Okay, I'll take the hand. Great.
You partially answered my shaila. My shaila was, what if the owner of the restaurant eats in his own
So
establishment?
there you go.
But
There you go.
I have another question. It's a little bit different for
Yeah.
someone that uses the kelim to profit as opposed to actually sell the kelim. It's a completely different
Right.
industry because
Right.
it's being used for kli seudah. It's just not your own seudah.
Right, so you
It's not like
think,
Janet is
yeah.
using it for kli seudah. For her, it's an item with a number on it.
Right.
For a hotel, it's used for a seudah, just not for the owner's seudah. It's for the customer's seudah.
So you think like Rav Schechter, you think like Rav Belsky. This is a pseudo. You can't lie. You can't say that
Yeah,
it's,
sure.
you can't put a. You can't put a different label on it. It's the exact same label that says Suda on it. You bought it for Suda purposes, and calling it Suda is chora. No, it's Suda. You have to take it to the mikveh. That's the policy of the OU. The OU requires you to take the kelim to the mikveh for that reason, but also a few other reasons as we will discuss. We will discuss. But it's important for us to understand the Mekilim. Chacham Ovadia and his sons, Ovadia writes in three or four places that Jewish restaurants, hotels, kiosks that didn't do tzvila, you should be machmir on them to tell them to do it. But if they didn't do it, Ovadia says, don't worry about it. It's all klei sechora. And even though Rav Shlomo Kluger, I misspoke before, Rav Shlomo Kluger is machmir, and Rav Moshe Feinstein is machmir. Pashut is machmir, Rav Moshe Feinstein. He says that you can't even eat off of the kelim, unless it's, we'll talk about how to eat off of them, but it's really the chachila not to, the minchat Yitzchak, the chachat Yaakov. They all assume that if the tevila was not done, it's okay. And if the store owner wants to take them to the mikveh, the restaurant owner wants to take them to the mikveh, he may not recite a beracha on them at all. It should be noted that even though Rav Avadia, in all the Rav Avadia Torahs, all the Rav Avadia Svarim, it says that Chacham Avadia is welcome Tzaddik. Oh, it's good to see you. Even though Chacham Avadia, in all the Chacham Avadia Svarim, it says that hotels and restaurants don't have to take their kelim to the mikveh. Rav Avadia in practice required it of the restaurant owners and the hotel owners in Tel Aviv, Ir HaKodesh. The only time he was mekel on them was if the Chacham Gid'on ben Moshe, who is a Rosh Kolel in Yichaveh Da'at and a big Tami Chacham, he's also Persian, Chacham Gid'on ben Moshe says that, actually he's right here, sitting right here in the corner. I'll bring him into the Beit Midrash, if I can reach and get him off. A little bit stuck. Okay, whatever. Chacham Gid'on ben Moshe says that Ovadia used to be machmir on the hotel owners, only make it on them certain times. I would introduce you to who he is. He's a major Tami Chacham, but I'm having some trouble with my laptop, so we're just gonna keep going. Anyway, so Rav Avadia was Mekel only sometimes in practice, but on paper, Rav Avadia is very Mekel about hotels and kiosks. So if a person finds himself in such a situation that he is in a commercial establishment, not in a private home, in a commercial establishment where they profit off of people eating off of their kelim, one does not have to be concerned if the kelim are not taken to the mikveh yet. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is not taken by this. He thinks that kelim from public institutions and places such as army bases and hospitals for sure need to need tevila, and even a restaurant needs tevila. But he argues like this. Remember the very first chabura that we had? We asked, is tevilat kelim deoraita or is it derabanan? And we said that tevilat kelim is definitely deoraita according to many Rishonim. But what does that mean, it's deoraita? That means that Yeshua Yaakov says it's deoraita to take it to the mikveh. But to not take it to the mikveh and to eat off of it is only an isur derabanan. That's meant to encourage you to take it to the mikveh. So wait a minute. Do you mean to tell me that I go to the restaurant and they didn't take this cup, this glass, this plate, the fork to the mikveh? So what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to pick up the fork, walk to Shari Rachamim, walk to Great Neck Synagogue, and take it to the mikveh? They're not going to let me get out the door with this thing. In such a case, I'm in anus. There's no way I can do it. And since that's the case, when you go to the restaurant, you are not chayav. Since it's not your kli, it's not your mitzvah. Since it's not your mitzvah, you're allowed to eat off of it because there's no derabanan. It's only a mitzvah deoraita for the person who owns the kli to take it to the mikveh, says Rosh Shlomo Zalman from the Yeshua Yaakov. But if it's not your kli, you don't even have a mitzvah derabanan to not eat off of it. In that case, it would be permissible, Rosh Shlomo Zalman says, to eat off of the kli in the hotel, in the restaurant. In practice, the OU requires all kelim be taken to the mikveh, and that's for a number of reasons. One of them is, even though it, you know, the food is going to be kosher either way, they don't want people to be doing an avera when they come to the restaurant. And even though it's not their avera, even though you can say the whole like Rosh Hashanah Zalman, there is still a mitzvah for the hotel owner. And at least in a local kashrus, the role of the local kashrus organization, not necessarily the national one, is to be the rabbi. And the rabbi would tell you, listen, buddy, you should take your stuff to the mikveh. It's halacha, you're supposed to do that. And that would be one of the reasons why the OU says you're supposed to take your kelim to the mikveh. Chacham and Tzion, I just got this new Or LeTzion Chelek Hay on Yoredeya, and he also is quoted in over there as saying that what should we call it? And as saying that Bishat Hadachak you can eat there, but better is to have the kelim all taken to the mikveh. I forgot another reason why we say that it should go to the mikveh from the OU is that the mashgiach is going to eat there, and the mashgiach doesn't want to eat off of kelim that we're not taking to the mikveh. Okay. Ad Khan, until now, thus far, are the halachot of the restaurants and restaurants and other commercial establishments. At this point, we're going to transition to a new topic, specifically that of ownership. When you have a worker, this is Rabbi Eliassi has been waiting for this one for a few weeks already, and we finally made it. Baruch Hashem, we finally made it. When this, all of these conversations we had thus far were about when one acquires a kli from a goy, he gave it to you. And in all of the different versions of that transaction, all the different methods of that transaction, whether it be a sale, a loan, collateral, any other thing that would require tevila, and the purposes of that transaction that would require tevila, we discussed all of that at length. Now we're going to discuss a different mode, a different method of, we're not going in the direction of goy to us, goy to Jew. We're going in the direction of Jew to goy. And that is very interesting. What happens if your keli breaks and you give it to the goy to fix it and you get it back from him? Does that require tevilat kelim or not? The Gemara tells us about this interesting concept called Uman Kone Bishvach Kili. And Uman, a worker, acquires a kli through the improvement of the kli. Through his production of the kli, by fixing it or producing it, he acquires a part, a share in the kli. You handed him a sheet of metal, or you handed him a broken kli. At that stage, it was only worth $100. When he fixed it, when he created it, so then now it's worth $120. He added $20 of value to the kli. Uman kone b'shvach kli. And when you pay him for it, you bought off that piece. It's as if you bought a kli from a goy. Would that require tevilat kelim or not? That is a grand machloket rishonim. And in Shulchan Aruch it says that lehalacha lemaaseh, we do not subscribe to this concept of uman kone b'shvach keli. And therefore, it is not a problem. If you hand over, you hand over a kli to a goy to fix it, we're not concerned that he now has acquired a share in its value. And even if you did, Maran writes in Sif Yud of our Siman Kufchaf, even if you did assume that Uman Kone Bishvach Kli, we would still say that this is not normal. This is not the pattern that was set by the Torah. We said how Lekuchin Ukema'asi Shehaya, only Kelim that were purchased in a fashion that is similar to that of the episode of the war with Midian, which they conquered the Midianim and they took all of their kelim. That is when we say that one's keli would require tevila. So that is when we say that one's keli would require tevila. In this situation, where you handed him your keli and asked him to fix it for you, you did not give it to him in a way that would require tevila, simply because the entire time that he owned it, that he took it from you, he didn't own it. It still had a Shem Yisrael. It was still under a Jewish name. And because it was still under a Jewish name, even though he fixed it, he worked on it, he never got a non-Jewish name. And it's the non-Jewish name, the title, has to be in the hands of a non-Jew in order to require Tevilat Kelim. And since the worker doesn't acquire that title, that ownership level, even if you assume Uman Kodesh Vakli, we assume that it would still not require Tevilah, and that is what the Shulchan Aruch says explicitly, Halakha L'Maaseh. All of that said, even though Shulchan Aruch says it, some say, this is the opinion of the Ritzba, the Baal HaTosafot, that let's say, okay, he fixed your kli for you, but what if he took your cup, and your cup was so broken that it didn't even hold anything anymore. It's already batel from Torah kli, and then he fixed it for you. Maybe then he would have a shame kli, shame akum. And Shulchan Aruch says, no, we don't really care about this at all. Either way, you are patur from tevila. It's a big discussion what exactly is the opinion of the Ritzva, but we're going to assume for now that it is, as I said, that it was no longer viable to hold anything. So this is a machloket in Shulchan Aruch. The Rama is machmir for uman kone b'shvachli. Maran is mekel. Maran says you don't have a shame goy either way, and therefore it's all good. This applies in a few other places also. This uman kone b'shvachli in Evna Ezer and Choshen Mishpat, but it's not really relevant to our discussion any further than this. And All of that said, I told you, Shulchan Aruch holds, and you give a goy raw materials, you give a goy a broken kli to fix it, and he or make something for you, and he does. Shulchan Aruch says it's patur, the Rama says chayav, as a chumrah. All of that said, the Ben Ishchai and the Zivchei Tzedek, by the way, Zivchei Tzedek is right here, this is the Rebbe of the Ben Ishchai, and the Ben Ishchai is right there, and on this entire shelf, this is the Ben Ishchai, Baruch Hashem, all right there. So Chacham Avadia is here too. He's just further. He got moved. He used to be down here. Now the Chacham Avadia is all the way up there and up there and up there. I got one Ben Yishchai shelf and three Rav Avadia shelves. Baruch Hashem. One and a third Ben Yishchai shelves. Anyway, so the Ben Yishchai and Zivchei Tzedek, his Rebbe, are machmir for this Rama. They say it's a good idea, and Chacham Avadia blasts them. Why are you being more machmir than Shulchan Aruch? All of this is uman kone b'shvach kli. I'll point out to you that as interesting as that sounds, you know, you get your handyman to come fix your kli for you. Really, nowadays, you don't even fix kelim anymore. You just buy a new one on Amazon. I heard that from Mordechai Levhar. We just buy a new one on Amazon, but even if you did get a handyman to fix your kli for you, the Chazon Ish has a wild chidush. Chazon Ish has a wild chidush. He says that this whole concept of uman kone b'shvach kli, of the worker, you know, gaining a share in the improvement in the principle of the kli, is only true in a country where that is also true in the federal civil law. But if in civil federal law, we assume that an uman is not kone b'shvach kli, so then it doesn't matter here. That is an important thing to take in mind, take into account. I'm not sure about the U.S. federal law and how it works with workers and wages and what they produce in the factories, or in China either, but that is an important point. The Chazon Ish says that if you ever want to employ this halacha of uman kone b'shvach kli, you have to make sure that it's also true in the law of the land as well as Choshen Mishpat. Now, all of that is if you hand the goy some materials to create a kli for you. What happens if the goy contributes some of his own materials to the process? You know, you hand him a broken kli, and he says, you know what, I got just the type of material to fix this, let me put it in there for you, and he does it, and great. What happens? What would you guys say? Thank you.
Can you repeat the question? Sorry.
No problem. Let's say, I told you
Rabbi,
that.
you're saying that the goy input something tangible of his own ownership into your kli?
Yes, Rabbi Eliyasi said the question again. I'll just say it a little bit more about Harchava. I told you that if you bring raw materials, purely Jewish-owned materials to a goy, or you bring your kli along with your raw materials and ask him to fix it for you or make something for you, Shulchan Aruch says, don't worry about it. Don't need tevila. And the Rama says you should be machmir. You should do tevila without a beracha. What happens if you didn't bring him all the materials? You brought him your broken cup. There's a cup, chai. You know, once upon a time, the cup got a hole and all the chai came out. So you walked over to him like, listen, you have anything I can put in this hole? Or basically has whatever materials you need. You don't have all the materials to close it up. So what happens if he does that? He adds his own materials to your existing broken kli. That's the question. No? No tefillah, Rabbi Sitar.
I would assume that if he's not replacing majority of the material of the vessel, then it does not require a new bracha.
Ooh.
Sure not.
Okay, so Rabbi Eliyasi says, first of all, Rabbi Setar says, not at all, no tevila, good. And Rabbi Eliyasi says, depends. You're both right, it depends on the shita you take. Depends on the shita you take. According to Shulchan Aruch, who cares who adds the stuff? Who cares whose stuff it is? If the Ikar Kli is yours, so then who cares if he adds anything? Because your Kli is Mivatel everything, and his principle that he adds is not included. We don't hold of Uman Kona Mishvach Kli. It's the Kli has a Jewish name to it, even though there's a piece of it that has a non-Jewish name to it. Rabbi Eliyasi is saying a little bit more nuanced, it depends on how much is he adding. What if he adds, 50% to 51% of the material? You walk in with less than half a cup. The cup is not half full, or it's not even half empty. It's a little bit less than half.
So, he uses your handle. The rest of the cup he makes on its own.
Oh, so there you don't even have a beit kibul. You don't have anything there. You got a handle. But, okay, that too. That would require it to be according to everybody if you used your handle. I'm talking about, he had your shattered, crack down the middle cup. And if you took off a big chunk of it also, what would be the halakha? You're saying, it's a rov. Okay, so rov... The Rama here says that if some of the material belongs to the goy, then either way it requires tevilat kelim, even if some of the material belongs to the goy. And now there's a big machloket acharonim of how, what does that mean?
The Rama said with a bracha?
Oh, so that's the machloket acharonim. With a beracha or without a beracha?
It's a metal kli, let's assume, so with a bracha?
It's metal kli, it's chayav in tevila, but it's my metal cup. My metal cup got a big hole. Big crack, and the goy came in and filled in the missing material. The Rama says you need tevila. So the Taz says, Chas v'shalom, say a beracha on this. Why did you say a beracha on that, says the Taz? That doesn't make sense. It's batel berov. And it's at most, it's a ma'amid. It just enables it to stand. In such a case, we would say, no beracha. Whereas the Shach and the Pri Chadash say, of course you say a beracha. What happened? The goy owns this piece, this sheet of metal, and he put it onto this, right? He still owns that sheet of metal. When you pay him for your services, you are buying that piece of metal from him. So until then, it was a kli b'shutafut. It was a kli with a partnership in it. A kli with a partnership, when you end the partnership and you take full possession of the kli, requires tevilat kelim, says the Rama. And therefore, you would have to take it to the mikveh. The pre-toar, though, it says like Rabbi Eliyasi. He says it depends. If rov belongs to the Jew, pater. Because even if it has shem shel goy, it still belongs to the Jew for the rov. But sometimes, he says that it would be like a shutafut, and therefore, if you have rov of a goy, it would require tevila with a beracha, I think. Either way, the pre-toar is just explaining the Rama for Shulchan Aruch, Pri Chadash, Pri Tor, we would all assume not like this. We would all assume that the Uman is not going to contribute enough to be Mechayev Tevila because it still has a Shem Yisrael on the Kli. Nevertheless, the Zivchei Tzedek and the Ben Ish Chai Both recommend one be machmir and do tevilah, especially if the hole was on the bottom to the point, low enough down, that there isn't enough space below the hole to hold a ravit of water. They would recommend one be machmir in such a situation. This is also very important to understand what was contributed. What did the goy do? There was a hole and the goy fixed it? Okay, but what if he didn't fix the hole? Eliyasi brought this up also a few weeks ago. What happens if the goy takes my kli and he adds a whole layer of silver to it? He coats it in silver, or he adds a layer of lacquer to the silver that has already tarnished. In such a situation, would it require tevila or not? So it depends on why you're doing this coating. If the coating is decorative, if it's merely a decoration, so then we would say that tevila is not required. And we would say that tevila is not required. Whereas if the coating is not decorative, it is actually going to contribute something, then it gets more complicated. That it enters what we were discussing before about the worker and not. But if it's just a decoration, you know, it was going to work either way. You just added another layer to it, that shouldn't cause any problems, says the Pri Chadash. Nevertheless, the Mishnah Berurah says, even if it's decorative, do tevila without a bracha. And others say it's like kunya, like we said by a kli that's made of ceramic but coated in glass or coated in metal, that it would go by the outside. So here the outside would be chayev, so you have to take the kli to the mikveh. Rav David Cohen from the CRC, in his great book on kashrus and tevilat kelim, actually points out how bakeries do this all the time. Bakeries have these big tin sheets that they put in the oven to bake all of their goods. And they always scrape off stuff. They're always scraping off the baked goods from the tin. So after a while, it gets all scratched up. It doesn't look nice. So they send it to a factory, and the factory re-tins. They add a layer to fill in all of the scratches on the pans. So Rav David Cohen said that that's just decorative. It still works. Even with the re-tin, without the re-tinning, it still works. It's just decorative, so it looks nicer. That would enter this machloket between the Pri Chadash and the Mishnah Berurah, whether you don't do tzvila at all, or if you do tzvila without a beracha. The Ben Ish Chai says the minhag in Baghdad was that we don't do tefillah in these situations. If a person has a kli that he has a goy add a coating to, Ben Ish Chai says we don't care about the other poskim. The minhag is that we don't do this. We don't even do tefillah without a beracha, just like the Pri Chadash. Does that answer your question, Rabbi Yasi? You had a slightly different question though, so it might not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's all the same. But Rav Avadia hold the same?
So I don't know. Rav Avadia didn't argue. What do you do when Rav Avadia doesn't scream at the Ben Ish Chai?
You would assume that he agrees.
I think, if you ask me what I would do, it's mutar according to Shulchan Aruch, even if it contributes. Even if it adds on. It's mutar according to Shulchan Aruch. And
but
only...
Mutar to take it?
Huh?
Mutar to take it to the mikveh?
Mutar to not take it to the mikveh. Mutar to use it without tevila. When you ask the goy to fix your cup, right? Shulchan Aruch says, don't worry about it. Rama says, be machmir. There, the Ben Ish Chai says, you should be machmir. Right? Rav Avadia screams at him for that. Then there's another machloket. What happens if the goy adds a layer that is just decorative? The Pri Chadash says, don't worry about it. You don't need tevila. Mishnah Berurah says, tevila without a beracha. The Ben Ish Chai says, we hold, minhag is, tevila without a beracha. The Ben Ish Chai is speaking from the first chumrah. The first chumrah of when the goy fixes something for you, take it to the mikveh. The Ben Ish Chai says, hold it there. If it's decorative, don't take it to the mikveh. Whereas according to Shulchan Aruch, according to Rav Avadia, it doesn't even get started. Because you never had that first chumrah for the Ramah. It was always okay when the goy works on your kli for you. So Rav Avadia would tell you that you don't have to take it to the mikveh. I feel very confident in that now that you asked me. I didn't think it through enough before, so thank you very much. That was great. Okay, moving on. That was all when it's a non-Jewish worker on a Jewish kli. What if we reverse it? This is where it's going to get very practical, because we don't really have non-Jewish workers with working on our kelim so much, or at least we think so. But once we understand this whole idea of workers, the concept of factories and buying a kli that doesn't need tefillah, because it was made by a Jew, will become very clear to us. Hopefully we'll get somewhere very quickly on that. Now, what happens if it's a Jewish craftsman, a Jewish worker, a Jewish repairman, and he has a shop, and Christopher comes in with his broken kli and says, "Do you mind fixing this for me?" He says, "Sure, no problem." So he fixes it for Christopher, and Christopher says, "You know what?" He says, "You know what? I don't want it anymore. You want to just buy it off of me?" And you're like, "Sure, why not? I'll buy it off of you. It looks nice. I'll keep it." And you buy it off of Christopher. You fixed it. You, the Jew, fixed it. And then you bought it off of the goy before he got it back. Does it need tevilah or not? So this is also part of the conversation. If you assume that a worker never contributes enough to remove the name, the shame of the owner, such that when a Jew gives a kli to a non-Jew to fix, it doesn't get a shame akum to require tevilah, then the reverse should also be true. When a goy gives a kli to a Jew, then it never loses its shame akum, and it never gets a shame Yisrael. So of course, Shulchan Aruch will tell you, that requires tevilat kelim. But it really does depend though. It really does depend. Well, how did the Jew fix this kli? How did the Jew fix this kli? If the non-Jew handed him the material and said, "Here is my broken cup and here is a sheet of metal, do me a favor, put it all together." So the Ramah says in that situation, when you buy the kli from him afterwards, tevilat kelim with the beracha. That said, there's a little bit of debate about this Ramah, and the Pri Chadash, and it could be the Ramah means without a beracha. Sorry, I misspoke. The Ramah says tevilat kelim, even if it's non-Jewish material, tevilat kelim without a beracha. And it's a discussion of why he says without a beracha. It should be obvious based on what we just said. It should be obvious based on what we just said that you need tevilah. Yeah, Johnny, you had a question? No? Okay. Yeah?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
So it should be obvious.
I have a question for after this topic.
Sure. I end at 9:45 usually because we have Arvit at 9:45. But I'm happy to keep going. Don't worry, I'm not in Great Neck anyway, so it doesn't matter for me. Whoever has to go, usually we stop at 9:45. I know Tomer is home. Isaac is, for Isaac, it's at 6:45, okay? I don't know if Matt is in.
Thank you so much, by the way, for your time. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you for coming to the Shiur, Baruch Hashem.
Thank you.
So, anyway, so according to what I told you about not losing the name of a goy, when a Jew fixes it, it should require tevilah with a beracha, but the Ramah says, do tevilat kelim without a beracha. And it's a big machloket of why. What was the Ramah so concerned about? What was the Ramah so concerned about that it should be that way? We're not going to get into it now. Lemaaseh, if one wants to be machmir for the Ramah and not do tevilah, he has quite a few poskim who say that way as well. Whereas Shulchan Aruch would probably tell you to do it with a beracha. Ramah says no beracha. As if Chet Zedek says that way as well. Safek berachot lehakel. And this idea of a Jew repairing something, if he uses Jewish material, the Ramah says it doesn't need tevilah at all. Maybe because, number one, it's made by the Jew, and number two, because we might say Uman Kone Bishvach Kli, we might say that way. This idea kind of lends itself when you have a kli, you're not sure if it needs tevilah, or it's very hard to do tevilah. You know, electronic appliances or whatever, the Chochmat Adam says, you get a Jew to break it, and then put it back together. In a way that only an uman, a craftsman, an artisan would be able to do it, then that would be sufficient to get it out of the mitzvah of tevilat kelim. which is what we, when we discussed Keurig machines, we discussed how there's a guy in Lakewood, or David Cohen says in his book, who basically solders off and then re-solders on the electrical wiring, and he calls that breaking and fixing. And even though it's not so hard to just hold the thing over, we discussed whether or not that's called a ma'ase uman, a work of artisanship, to reinstall or re-solder on the wire. The idea there is that if it's a real ashar hadachak, we have no other way to get this kli to the mikveh, we can get a Jew to break it and remake it. And that would work for this Rama to basically, what you may call it, and avoid the mitzvah of tevilat kelin. Yeah.
Regarding this Rama, what if a Jew just cosmetically ruined something? Would that be considered breaking it?
No.
It has to be functionally broken.
Functionally broken. Functionally broken.
It can't be like just scratch it up and then repaint it.
In the OU files, or Velsky...
Right. You can't just like take out a screw of plastic and then put it back, right?
Nachon. In the OU files, the OU has a lot of secret, top secret files that they don't publish on their website. But if you email them and tell them I'm learning Hilchot Tevilat Kelim, they will send you. Or if you tell them I'm learning Basar Bechalav, they will send you the ones that are relevant to Basar Bechalav. Or the ones that are relevant to whatever you're learning in the Halachot of Kashrut. They just don't want it to be so public, you know, less people make problems for them. So anybody who's learning these Halachot can get them. It's not that top secret.
My brother actually inquired about a particular brand of gum that doesn't have OU extra with them. And they're like, it's kosher l'Pesach, we just don't certify it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a lot of information that you have to ask for that's not like publicly knowledge known. The OU, the just Oreos being parv is not the only secret that you have to ask them about every 6 months. there's a lot of information in the world of kashrus that is very intriguing, very practical, and very helpful. And there's a lot of Torah that they can teach you also.
Anything else besides Oreos that we don't know about?
Anything else besides Oreos? At the moment, I do not know. I do not know.
What about Ritz crackers?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
I think those are like Oreos. I think it's dairy equipment, but I'm not sure. Double check.
I'm not holding Isaac. If you find out, let me know.
Let's go to Israel.
Gotta go to Arzino Kedosha. Gotta know the kashrut situation there, too.
This is not a joke. Hashem is sending us messages.
It's very true. One more topic, and then
I don't know. I honestly think this could be the end of times. Honestly,
I don't know, Chacham Jani.
Gog Magog. That's why I wanted to ask you. I wanted to know more information on Gog Magog.
I'm not holding. I spent my summer learning Tevilat Kelim, not Sefer Zecharia. One day, hopefully, I'll learn Sefer Zecharia also. I'm not holding. I'm not holding every time.
We're going to live it soon.
Okay. Hashem.
We're going to be able to go back to our homeland. And actually, I learned a very, very nice Gemara. It said that in the end of times, all the nations, they're going to go to Hashem. And they're going to say, yeah, everything that we did, the Romans are going to go to Hashem first. And then the Persian Empire is going to go to Hashem. And they're going to say, all the things that we did were for the benefit of the Jewish people. And then Hashem's going to say, no, it's for the benefit of you.
Yeah.
But then Hashem says, you know what? I'll give you one more mitzvah, and if you do it, then you can get the reward.
Right.
But they didn't do it.
Right. The Gemara says they... Sukkah. They actually, they're trying. That's what all the tents are outside on the streets. The Gemara says that they mitzvah sukkah, they're going to try it. But then it's going to get really hot, and they're going to all run, kick and run out of the sukkah. So it's funny. You look outside on the streets during coronavirus, every restaurant has a sukkah outside. Right? It's pretty funny. But
that's cute.
Nevertheless, one more halacha for tonight, and we're going to have to discuss factories next time. Be'ezrat Hashem. What happens if you decide to buy a kli, and you're going to melt it down? You bought some nice gold cups, and you want to melt it down and make a gold bowl. You bought it from a goy. So the Pri Chadash, Zivchei Tzedek, they both say that it's pashut. It's so obvious. If you bought it with intention to melt it down, that it's not even a kli. That's not even clay seuda for you. You're not eating that. But what if you bought it at first as a collector's item, some nice gold from wherever? And to put on your in your cabinets, on your shelves for display. And then you decide, you know what? I want to melt it down, and I want to make a kli out of it and use it for food. So now they're not sure. Because maybe the melting it down won't remove the requirements for tevila. Or maybe it will. Maybe it's panim chadashot ba'ol lechan, which is in kashrut by pottery kalim, it might work to melt it down and reconstitute it if it's even possible. And also by when it comes to tuman ta'ora, if you have a tameh kli that's made of metal and you melt it down to make another one, midrabanan, it's still tameh. So the Pri Chadash says that he thinks that, you know what, if you melt it down, no matter what, no matter what your original intentions were, it would no longer require tevila at all. All in all, guys, we learned a few important halachot tonight. Just in summary, we discussed the hotels and the two major approaches between looking at commercial catering, commercial kalim, for catering purposes, that either it doesn't require tevila at all, at least b'diavad, or it does require tevila. Two different approaches right there. And then we discussed repairs, manufacture, by an individual goy. When the goy is the one doing the fixing, and for Shulchan Aruch it's always okay, no matter whose stuff it is or how much he does, it's all good. And then if the Jew is doing the fixing, that is going to also depend on whose material he's using. And we just discussed what happens if you melt it down. Be'ezrat Hashem, next time we'll get into the factories. What happens if you have a factory in China and you want to produce some kalim for Jews that won't ever have to go to the mikveh? How do you handle that? How do you get that to happen? How do you own the metal? How do you own the stuff in China if you're sitting here in New York or Seattle in order to make sure, maybe Seattle you can like wave to them. But at least here in New York, how can you own the metal in China to make sure that it's produced as belonging to a Jew and not require tevila? It's a great topic. It's a good thing we didn't have time for today because it would be chaval to squeeze it in. And then from there, we're going to discuss tevila of disposables, be'ezrat Hashem, as well as the Pesach problem. I mean, what happens if you sell your kalim? You sell all of your kalim with the chametz inside of them. Do you have to do tevila when you get them back? It's a great question, and they were shitarot. There were contracts of the sale of chametz from hundreds of years ago where they used to sell their kalim. So what was the halacha there? And there still are today. Some communities today still sell the kalim as well. Okay, thank you very much, guys, all for coming. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure to learn Torah together. Looking forward to next week, Monday night, 9 o'clock. Hopefully in person, and also in Zoom, if anyone's interested. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Tiskul Mitzvah, guys.
Rabbi, thank you.
Erev Tov.
Thank you.
Erev Tov.